is similar to some of the more challenging alleles that we've seen so far. But we'll do what we can, and some points especially we'd like to mention for their synergistic potential and their synergistic actuality. A lot of crazy synergy today, so let's at least highlight some of those, and we'll see how much time we have, and we'll see whether we end up talking a little Pesach today or not also. So the fifth aliyah of Parshas Metzora begins on a point of synergy. Because the Pasuk states, Zos HaTorah L'chol Nega HaTzaras V'lo Nesek. So this is the Torah for all the different types of Tzaras and all the different types of Nesek, or the Nesek itself, probably we should say better. So the Torah's Kohanim has a comment here. You have to figure out what this means, because here the Pasuk has included all the types of Tzaras in one. So what does that mean? They don't have one set of rules. That's what the past two Parshias are telling us, all these complicated rules for all the different situations. So, says the Torah's Kohanim, what does this show you? That let's say you have somebody who's a baki in the goyim, but he's not a baki in Hilchas Nesek. So then he shouldn't paskin even on the goyim. So what does that sound like? That sounds like the Rambam that we talked about a few weeks ago, for a little synergy point. Right, the Rambam's idea that one should not get smicha, even a specialized smicha, if he's not qualified to paskin on everything. So here's kind of another support for that, that even when it comes to the psak of negayim, so within that realm, you can only paskin on one type if you are qualified to paskin on all the types. So what exactly is the nature of that? That's a good question. We could try to declare whether it actually does parallel what we've seen in the laws of Sanhedrin and Dayanim, but it certainly seems like it can score us some synergy points. The Gemara Maseches Erevin has a different focus on this pasuk, the language of Zos HaTorah. So that's where it says that if you have a pain in your head or you have a pain in your whole body, so what's the good advice? Yasuk b'Torah. And it says Zos HaTorah, that's the etzah you should deal with it through Torah study. So this is an appropriate time to note that, especially as we've understood that the maladies that we read about these weeks are caused by Lashon Hara, and nowadays we don't have this remedy to Lashon Hara, which is a big loss for us on that level. So it's noteworthy that the Gemara suggests in Erechin that the remedy that we do have for somebody who is involved in Lashon Hara is that he should learn Torah. So this is something that the Chafetz Chaim discusses barichas, whether that's a remedy in terms of it being a etzah to stop it in the future, or an etzah as a type of tshuva for Lashon Hara that's already been spoken, but that Talmud Torah is on one level or the other a corrective to the issue of Lashon Hara. And if you read the Haskamas to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, in case you're wondering whether it's a worthwhile Sefer to look at or not, so you should know it does have Haskamas. So among the Haskamas were the brothers from Vilna, Bezalel Koni Vilna, and Shlomo Koni Vilna, and they note there, and others note as well, that perhaps when we talk about Lashon Hara, we don't only mean Torah in general. Torah is a method of tshuva as a broad principle that we find elsewhere. But maybe when we talk about it as a corrective Lashon Hara, we mean specifically the laws of Lashon Hara, that one should sensitize himself to the various principles, and this is something that works well with the idea that we've emphasized often, that Lashon Hara is an area where you have to really try to create a sense of judgment that is refined and that is honed, because it's very hard to come at it like a code, and come at it and say, okay, this is also, this is mutter, but there's a tremendous amount of discretion that's going to have to go into it. So if one has found that he has stumbled, so then perhaps there's a greater need to familiarize yourself with the theoretical underpinnings so that you're able to address situations better in the future. So that's perhaps what we have, this idea that Talmud Torah, Hilchos Lashon Hara, is particularly helpful. And perhaps also this parsha, last week's parsha, are all ways of trying to sensitize us to the impact, as represented through the symbolism of these maladies, So too, to study these parshiyos, to study these topics, should be of tremendous benefit for us. How do you have that?
I'm not sure if you're about your Rebbe. In general, we're cooking on mitzvahs, that learning the lachos on the mitzvah.
Helps.
Yeah. Someone drops like a tefillin, then I also need to fast until it comes to this, and then...
Well, that's discussed in the Magen Avraham fasting for so that's a whole separate discussion. But the idea in general that part of a method is tshuva, or a method of addressing it head on, is becoming more, which makes a lot of sense. The more you are sensitive to the underlying concepts, the more you're going to be careful with it in the future. And perhaps that's especially true when it comes to Lashon Hara, because Lashon Hara is so easy to inadvertently transgress, as I think we've discussed a number of times in the past. So therefore, the more you have ingrained a certain type of perspective and attitude, so the better your judgment will be. Okay, so to continue on a little bit. So Psukim then go on to list all the different types of tzaras that show that they have different dinim. Ooh, tzaras habeged v'labayis, tzaras for the garments and for the houses. Velaseis, wasapachas, lobaheres, the different types of blemishes that a person could have. Lahoros, biyom hatomei, biyom hatahor, zos, toras hatzaras. Okay, so this is it. This is the idea to teach when it is unclean and to teach what's good and what's bad on the day of its relevance. So the language of biyom is relevant to halacha because Chazal understand that this riyas negayim can only happen during the daytime. So the Menachas Chinuch comments, you can't look at negayim during the nighttime, you need daylight. Perhaps it's a din in the riyas specifically, but the consequences to lock somebody up, that you can do at nighttime. Now it happens to be the Rambam in Halachos Tumas Saras and Parates Halacha Tes says explicitly not that way, that even that you can't do at night. So the Menachas Chinuch is differing from the Rambam and is assuming that you can do at night, and it's only the Re'iyah during the daytime. So there's a whole discussion about this in the Sefer Chavetz Chaim HaSharon about what exactly is the concern here. Is it that we see this as a type of psak, as a type of din, where we have a rule that din can't take place at night? Or is it that the Re'iyah, like we find, for example, with modern day Maros Shilas, that we use daylight, sunlight, in order to look at them, so especially this Menahem, when they didn't have same way we exclude, for example, Tzitzis from being obligatory at night, because the Torah says you have to see them, so you can't see at night. So too, maybe it's a practical din, and therefore, once it has already been seen, so the judgment that emerges from that, maybe that could happen. Right? So that seems to be an issue that's raised by this comment of Menachas Chinuch. It's interesting to note here because we talked, I think, last week about the question, or a few weeks ago, the question about the breakdown of Prakim and how that's not a Jewish breakdown and how it doesn't always sync up. So here, it's just interesting, if you look at this Aliyah, so you have a very long parak before this, 57 Psukim, and the last four of them are in this Aliyah, and then the rest is from the next parak. So here you can see where they're coming from in terms of the parak division, because these last four Psukim, we're talking about Tzaras, and now we're going to change the subjects. That's what the rest of the Aliyah is about. It's about other things. So we start here by Dabar Shel Moshe Gal Aaron Lemor. So God says to Moshe to Aaron, Dabar the Neisrael Gamartem Aleihem Ish Ish Ki Zov Mipsoro Zovo Tamehu. So you should speak to the people, and you should tell them that if a man has a discharge, so that will confer tumah upon him. And this is what his tumah is going to be. Ror misaro ezovo or heftim misaro misovo tumasovi. So it doesn't matter whether it's running very strong or whether it's kind of a slower process or it just is plugging him up. Either way, that's going to be a source of tumah for him. And kol hamishka v'shemishka v'alav. Hazav, Yitma, and whatever bed he's going to sit on, he's going to lie on, so that will become Tameh, B'chala Kli, Asher Yeshu, Olav Yitma. And any Kli that he should sit on, assuming, let's say, that that's what it's for sitting on, so then that will also become Tameh. V'yish, Asher Yigav, and Mishkavo, and if somebody's going to touch that bed, So yichabes begado v'rachatz b'mayim v'tamei ar ha'aret. So he should then wash his clothes, and he shall bathe himself in water, and then he's going to be tamei until the night. So what does it mean to bathe himself in water? What's that a reference to? That's a reference to mikvah, and that's a theme that we have throughout the rest of this aliyah. The idea of mikvah, this is the first of many, many mentions of washing in water. And there's a lot to say about this hashkafically and, of course, halachically. So Rav Ruvel with Mashkiach Kerbiavna has an essay about this in a Sefer on Chumash, where he talks about ideas that he finds elsewhere. He quotes so strongly from, quotes heavily from Rav Hirsch. And it's an idea that you find elsewhere, that we find that the mikvah is used both as a way to go from Tumah to Tahara, and also as a way to go up a level, even if a person is not Tameh necessarily, but like we find the Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, and like we find with other appointments related to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, that the mikvah not only purifies those who are in a state of Tumah, but also even those who are not in a state of Tumah, this is something that creates a enhancement, that creates an upgrade. So the whole theme of the mikvah he talks about in this essay, and he notes an idea, again this is an idea that many have, that Tumah, in many of the cases, Tumah doesn't necessarily connote any kind of Aveira. It's hard to really find a good translation in English for Tumah, because you talk about it, it sounds like it has some kind of Aveira associated with it. Tara and Tameh is good and bad, pure and impure, holy and unholy. It sounds like it's something negative, which to some degree it is, but not negative in a way that implies guilt specifically for the person who did it. It's something that in many cases is a natural process, which often is not connected to any kind of guilt or any kind of control at all. And therefore we have to understand what it's about. So it seems like the theme that you find in many places is that it's connected to life or potential life and that ending. So death is the via bosa tumor, the end of life, and also the emission of anything which could cause life or could be a cycle of life. All of that is connected to the types of tumor that we talk about. Hi.
Other people have said this also.
Yeah, it's a common
idea. How does sheretz fit into like that situation? How does that connect? I mean, Tumas Mace obviously fits. It's the most explicit. But when you get to like something like that particular detail, so maybe you say like cockroaches are found.
Yeah, it's a good question. How to make every detail fit in? I don't know if they all fit so well. I think a lot of the examples seem to underline this theory in a powerful way. Whether it has to effectively account for every specific din of Tumah, I'm not sure if it has to be a problem or not, it's a good question. But at least many of the cases that we find, it seems to be that there is a connection to that. And if that's the case, so the idea of the mikvah is supposed to symbolize a rebirth. So you go into the water as we know is symbolic of Torah, and one gets into it completely, fully, and this is an idea that Rav Dessler discusses in his Mikvah of Nolio, as Rav Ruvel quotes, that the one who goes into the mikvah is not going to have anything interrupting between him and the power of the Torah, the influence of the Torah, somebody who's going to separate completely from all physicality, from all Olam Hazeh, and just be without any kind of interruption between themselves and the symbolism of the water. And even the water itself is not drawn in a utensil, it's not shu'uvim, it has to be rainwater. And that also is because the kli is not the utensil that you would use to draw the water. That's the kind that you would take for purposes of olam hazeh. And even that has no involvement here. This is all pure and coming from shamayim and representing Torah without any interruption. And through all that, you are reborn. And the more you connect to that symbolically, the greater effect is going to have. Okay, so to continue the theme of Mayim, so again, this idea of Rachatz B'Mayim appears throughout the Saliyah, whether exact phrasing or not, and it appears in the next Pasuk as well, in Pasuk 12, right, where we find V'hayoshev ala kli asher yeshev ala hazav yichabes begadol v'rachatz b'mayim v'tamei ad harev. Again, somebody who sits on the kli where the zav sat, so same story. So he has to wash his clothes, he has to wash himself, and he's tamei until the night. So Chazal have a comment that this is main mikvah, as we just said, the Gemara Maseches Tegiga, and Daf Yud Aleph Mar Aleph. So Rashi over there says that the main mikvah comes to exclude shuvim, that halacha that we just mentioned a minute ago, that the water should not be drawn from anywhere, but should be rainwater. That's the source. And Tosa says, what are you talking about? We have a source already. It's from elsewhere. It's the pasuk that refers to mikvah in the context of a mayan. So just as a mayan is natural and flowing, so too the mikvah has to not have had its flow interrupted, so to speak, by any kind of physical kli, and it has to be pure rainwater. So the Sefer Beichia, the contemporary Sefer on Chumash, so he notes that one could perhaps ask a chakira here. This idea that mayim shuvim is puzzle for a mikvah. So how do you understand that? Do you understand that to mean that it is completely not mikvah water at all? That it's just a different substance? It might as well be meperos, might as well be fruit juice, it's got nothing to do with mikvah water? Or should we say that it's water, but it's like a treif water, so to speak. It's puzzle water. It's water that doesn't make the cut. So he thought that this could connect to these two possible sources. But if you say, like Rashi and Chagiga, there's this pasuk, so it means that the pasuk that's telling you the chi of mikvah is also describing a mikvah as something which is not shuvim, meaning that it is inherently part of the definition of the mikvah, that's what it means, this kind of water is excluded, and therefore that's not even mikvah water at all. While if it has to do with a hekesh tamayin, as Tosa says, so then it could be it's a halacha that the water has to be not shuvim, but it doesn't mean that that's inherently excluded from the very definition of mikvah water. It means that, practically speaking, it's mikvah water that you're not able to use. So he notes that this would have nafkaminas. One of the nafkaminas would be, at least on a level min haTorah, let's say you have water, which is, you have 40 saw of water for a mikvah, and most of it is not shuvim, but a minority of it is shuvim. Should we say, at least on a level min haTorah, that we should apply bittul berov, and we should say that the water that's not shuvim should negate the water that is shuvim. So that was the position of the Rash in his commentary, Rash Nisans, in his commentary to Mikvos, Perek Beis Olaf Gimel, while some Rishonim disagreed, such as the Tosfos Rid and the Rashbam and Baba Basra, and they felt that even the level of Torah, that was no good. And he suggested, and this is again somewhat synergistic, because this is evocative of things we talked about in the context of Beis Din, so you can have the concept of Rubo Kukulo, you can say that the Rove is going to be machriya the whole, and it's going to knock out, it's going to be mevatel the status of shuvim on the water if it's all water. But if what you have here, the shuvim, is considered not even mikvah water, so then it's not susceptible to that kind of bittul, and essentially you're missing a part of the quantity of the water you need to have, and that's going to be a problem. Even I love them in a Torah. Hi.
Are we relating this to like Bittul Barov has to be an exact opposite, like the rod?
So then you might come out and say differently if you want to relate to that. So we're relating it more to the idea that when you say Rubo Kukulo, so you need to at least have the miyut be something that could be counted. So if you don't have the miyut of the same species, essentially, so then maybe you can't even include it at all, and therefore that's not going to be affected. So just to read a few more of the Tzukim, Hanogeya, Bibsar Hazav, Yichabes Begodov, Rachat Amayim, Betamei Arav. So once again, somebody who touches the Zav is going to have the same din of Chiyorak Hazav, Betar, Bechibes Begodov, Rachat Amayim, Betamei Arav. Also, if the Zav spits on somebody, again, the same din of Chalam Merkel, Mishar Yirbel, Hol Hazav, Yitma. And if you sat on a saddle, so then that's also going to be Tamei Bechonegeya, Bechol Hashayiyah, Tachtav, Yitmar Harav. And whoever touches whatever is under that is going to be Tamei until the night. V'hanoseo sami chabesh begadav rachzumayim v'tamei arav. And the same thing again for somebody who carries any of these things. So So v'chol asher yigah bo hazah v'yada bo shatach b'mayim v'chibes b'gadol v'rachach b'mayim v'tamei ad ha'arav. Whoever should touch the zav and his hands were not washed through in water, not rinsed in water, again, status of tumah. So here there is a lot of synergy to draw upon, because this idea of yada bo shatach b'mayim, he hasn't rinsed his hands in water. So the Gemara Maseches Chulin and Daf Kavav Min Aleph, so the Gemara quotes Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, it says that from here you have a smach for Nikilas Yadayim Min HaTaru. This language of Yodav Lo Shatav, hands weren't washed, hands weren't rinsed, that this is a allusion to the idea of Nikilas Yadayim Min HaTaru. So it's interesting, the Tari Tamima comments over here, that that's funny because, I mean, that's not what the pasuk is really meaning. The pasuk really means tevila, really means immersion of the whole body. So to say that this somehow is any kind of connection to netilas yadayim and we only wash our hands is hard to understand. So he suggests to Tarek Tamima that maybe this opinion is saying that Chazal understood that the tevila for a zav is really actually the chumrah of the Torah, that the Torah is machmer on the whole body, but it's really the hands. That the hands, like you know from the first siman in the Mishnah Berurah, first siman in Shulchan Aruch, we do netilas yadayim in the morning. We say yadayim askarios, the hands are busy, they get everywhere, so therefore that's where the real tumah is. So the fact that the Torah uses that word, even though it really means to say that the whole body has to be immersed. And Chazal have a different drasha on the pasuk referring to hands to say that just like the hands are exposed generally, so too the base of sarim, the actually hidden parts, the actually concealed parts of the body, that the body itself conceals, doesn't have to have tefillah, so it's a different drasha. But the fact that the Torah uses the language of hands as a way to say the whole body shows that it's really about the hands, that the hands are really what's conveying tumah. So therefore, when Chazal made their din d'rabbanan of netilas yadayim, they focused on that, and that's what the Gemara means when it says that this is a remnant to that. This was their inspiration. So this kind of brings us into a little bit of synergy with our whole discussion about how Dinei Darabanan work and the like. But wait, there's more. There's more synergy to come with this. So that opinion is the opinion of Elazar ben Arach. The Gemara over there also has Abaye. Abaye says, no, it's a different story. That's Mishum Shrach Tumah. That because the Kohanim, we have a Gzeira that they should wash their hands for eating truma, and even though it doesn't really happen so much nowadays, we want to keep them in the habit, so therefore we make everybody wash their hands for bread. So the Baha'i, here's to get some synergy points. You recall that when we talked about Dinim Drabbanan and Mitzvahs Drabbanan, that the Rambam, even though he has what the Ramban considered to be too much of a strong view regarding Dinim Drabbanan and their source in the Torah, but still, there are limits that the Rambam, when he counts up mitzvahs, he doesn't list mitzvahs midrabbanan. But the Baha'i does list mitzvahs midrabbanan, but he doesn't list netilas yadayim. So the Rambam asks on him, l'shitascha, according to you, so why don't you? You should count netilas yadayim too. So the Ramban says, that's because the Ramban comes to defend the Baha'i here, which we find sometimes in the Sefer HaMitzvos, that the Ramban will be on one extreme of the Rambam, and the Baha'i will be on the other. But the Ramban will still write to defend the Baha'i, even though he doesn't really agree with his position. He'll write to defend him against the Rambam. So here it happens again. So the Ramban says that maybe the Baha'i is not going to count netilas yadayim because it's not really a mitzvah. It's really a gzeirah. And it's a part of the gzeirah of Shrach Tumah, the connection with the Kohen and the Truma, and therefore it doesn't get counted as a mitzvah. However, you should note that Tosus in the Chulin over there, Daf Kufav, says that according to Blazer ben Arach, that it's from this pasuk, or it's based on this pasuk, and really it's a new din, Mishum Nekiyas, and that would seem to be against the Ramban, that maybe it should be counted according to the Baha'i. So the Brisker Rav, in his Shiurim on Kachin, if you're familiar with the way that works, is that the Brisker Rav, we have a Sefer from the Ramban, and then I also say for the Torah, and we also have his Shiurim on Kachin. So you could buy that. That's come out in many, many different editions, similar to his father, Reb Chaim on the stencils, which eventually got more and more formalized, and later Maduras. So too, you can get the Brisker Rav on Kutchin. It gets more and more spruced up in later editions. So in his commentary to Sota, and Daf Dalet, the beginning of Sota, so there he says, he thinks there's two dinim in the Tilos Yedayim. One is Mishum Yisrach Tuma, and one is Mishum Nikias. One is its own idea that for cleanliness we wash our hands. So here's a little bit of synergy, or timeliness, on top of the already significant synergy points that we've seen in this din. So he also notes that the Gemara in the Sefer Pesachim, Adaf Kuf Tezvav Mebeis, talking about washing on vegetables during the Seder, so there you don't have a din of a bracha. So it says that because that's purely Mishum Tara, and therefore, like you see, that shouldn't necessarily have a status as an independent mitzvah, and therefore the bracha of Amatil Sidayim shouldn't apply to that. Okay, so to continue a little bit. So the Pasuk Yibay says, V'kli cheres asher yuga bo hazav, yisha ver, v'chol kli eitz, yisha teif b'mayim. And the utensil that's made out of earth, it's made out of clay, that azav touches that, then it has to be broken. And any kli that's made out of wood, so then that can go in the mikvah.
Wait, wasn't there the seder because of tara? That's why you wouldn't need a bracha?
Right.
It's only when it's for an akiyah.
Right, because then that's a separate mitzvah that Chazal assigned the bracha to.
There's a time when it's like just a... Wouldn't you think it would be the opposite? That if it was for Tahara, that would have a bracha involved?
No, because then it's more of a negative. Right? And so we don't have brachos on negatives. But we have our brachos on positive mitzvahs. And just to give the first example that comes to mind, so some ask, why is it that we don't make a bracha on the mitzvah of eating an Erev and Kippur? So some say, if you follow the theory that the reason we eat on Erev and Kippur is that we shouldn't have to break our fast in Yom Kippur, then that explains it's not an independent mitzvah, it's something that's there to prevent the problem. So even though it's an action, we wouldn't have a bracha associated with it. That's the kind of thing. Eldar.
If we do before we dip the vegetable, or why do we, if we wash the shuntara on Pesach, why do we do it all year round?
Why don't we do it all year round?
Yeah.
Oh, so now you're asking in minus tannins.
No, I'm saying like, right. In terms of Tara, what's the difference? Why is Pesach not significant?
Well, that is the minus tannins.
You're saying just because of Pesach?
Well, no, the truth is, you know, for fruit that are vegetables that are wet, you probably should wash all year round. But why we highlight it at the Seder, that's, you know...
I'm saying all year round you should do it. Right?
Yeah, but it's focused on the Seder, you know, that is, again, something you'll hear about in a week and a half. Okay, so, to continue, so then the next pasuk says, of Yom HaShmini, Yikach lo shtei sarim, o shnei v'nei yonah, uva lefnei Hashem al Pesach o moed, nesonam al kohen. Okay, so then... did I skip a line? I did skip a pasuk. Sorry, pasuk Yigimel. That's the one I want to talk about actually here. So pasuk Yigimel, let's go back for a second. Chi yitar hazav mizovo, v'safar lo shivas yavmul taraso, v'chi bes begadu v'rochot v'sar v'mayim chayim v'toher. So then, Zav, what should he do? So he should count 7 days, and towards Tara, and then again wash his clothes, and wash himself, and then he will be tar. So, what's the intent of saying here, v'safar lo? So, Chazal have a drasha on that, v'safar lo la'atzmo. So what does that mean? He counts for himself. So there is a comment in the Torah Tamima here that he thinks it means that it's comparable to what we find in the Gemara Maseches Ksubis on Daf Ayin Beis Min Aleph. I guess we didn't get that far last year. We almost got that far. That there the Gemara says, referring to a woman, that v'safra Allah la'atzma. That the Pasuk says v'safra Allah. So the Gemara has a drasha la'atzma, meaning that she is ne'emenes, that we don't have to have any kind of outside proof that she is believed on her own. So this is Nogei L'zman Hazeh, that we have Zayin Nikiyim during the period of Nida. So that counting for 7 days of the Zayin Nikiyim, so that's something she's believed. She doesn't have to have anyone else testify to her having waited 7 days. So just a little bit of synergy here. So or somewhat synergy, timeliness on the horizon. Tosfos and Ksubas asks, there are Tosfos and Ksubas notes that there's a difference here that when we count Sfiras Achronim, so there we make a bracha, and here and there the Torah says to count, and you don't make a bracha. So Tosfos says the reason you don't make a bracha, apparently understanding that they're somewhat comparable, is because we're worried that you may come to lose the day. We're worried that maybe, or may come to lose the whole process. That when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, we know that you can be confident that you're in control of the process, and therefore you can make a bracha, knowing you'll be able to make a bracha throughout. But when it comes to counting the days of Ziva, so maybe there's going to be another Riyah in the middle, and the whole process is not going to count. So therefore, no pun intended, is not going to be affected. So therefore, when we're counting, we're worried the whole thing's going to be for nothing, so we don't want to start with a bracha. And apparently, we're not worried about that when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, because in the context of Sfiras HaOmer, you have control. So that's a little bit timely again, getting us over a week and a half from starting Sfira, but also raised a lot of questions about whether or not that really is a concern when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer. So the fact that you have it here doesn't tell us the whole story by Sfiras HaOmer. By Sfiras HaOmer, are we really worried about that or not? So we know that we have a policy, by halacha, that if you miss a day when you're counting Sfiras HaOmer, so then you don't continue counting with a bracha. And that's one view in the Machlokas Rishonim. It's Machlokas Rishonim, the Bahag and Tosfos, whether you can keep counting with the bracha, whether you can keep counting really at all if you miss a day of Sfira. And our practice, the halacha, is to keep counting without a bracha. And some understand that to mean, the more conventional understanding, like the Prima Gaudim writes, that Sfiras HaOmer is all one big mitzvah, and therefore you're only yotz of the mitzvah if you do all 49 days. So once you miss a day, then you can't make a bracha after that. And then that poses the question, well, if that's true, so then what does it say about the promise that you made until you missed a day? So it seems like we should worry that retroactively, those were also brachos levatal. And that's what it sounds like Tosfos is saying here, that that's the reason why we don't have a bracha in this context of counting the Meziva, because we're worried that even though each day at a time it was indicated, but then when it turns out that it doesn't make it to the end, that all those brachos were unwarranted. So maybe that's the concern when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, that if you miss a day, not only are you missing the days after that, and you can't make a bracha after that, but maybe we should call into question the brachos that you made beforehand. So what? So I would say, what should you do with that? It's nafkamina for what purpose? It's nafkamina for tshuva. You should do tshuva for a bracha levatala. So, yes, maybe. But also, maybe nafkamina for somebody who knows that he's not going to get all the days. Let's say somebody has surgery planned, and he knows he's going to be out cold for more than 24 hours. It's very serious surgery. So then maybe we should say that he shouldn't start counting with a bracha because he knows that he's going to miss the count somewhere along the line. Maybe that's a reason not to do it. Or let's say maybe somebody has already a pattern of always forgetting. Let's say he's 127 years old, and for the past 114 years, every year, he only gets up to day 4 and then he forgets. So it's a pretty safe guess that he's going to forget here also. So maybe you should say, if you know you're going to forget, that there's a good chance you're going to forget, so then you shouldn't start with the bracha. So there are a number of ways to deal with that. First of all, it's a question whether there really is a concept of a bracha levatala l'mafreya. Is there really such a thing as a retroactive bracha levatala? When you do a mitzvah at the time, it's considered to be a mitzvah. Let's say something later on happens that defines it as less than a mitzvah, or not a mitzvah. So did that mean that the bracha at the time was no good? So many say no. It happens to mean that many might disagree. The Chida, for example, says in Sfiras HaOmer that that's the case, that if you miss a day in the middle, retroactively it's a bracha levatala. But others have asserted that you don't have a concept of a bracha levatala mafreya. So to use a synergy here, to use an example from within this aliyah, so the Ritva writes in the Chulin that when it comes to Netilas Yadayim, which is derived from this aliyah, as we saw a few minutes ago, that we know that you don't wash on bread the bracha if you're going to have a very small amount of bread. You have to have enough bread to justify washing with the bracha. So let's say you wash with the bracha, and then you take one bite, and somebody convinces you to go on the Atkins diet and says you shouldn't have any more bread. And he's so persuasive that at that point you say, okay, forget it, this one bite's enough for me. So is that considered to be a bracha levatavol mafreya because you made a bracha on the Netilas Yadayim, and now we see that you didn't really require a bracha on the Netilas Yadayim? So the Ritva writes that no, that that's not considered to be a bracha levatavol. At the time when you did the Netilah, you intended to have a significant amount of bread, so the bracha was justified. And whatever happens afterwards doesn't redefine that in a negative way. Similarly, the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he says, let's say you're mafresh truma. You set aside some truma, you make a bracha on doing that, and then later on you are shoel al ha-truma, just like you can be shoel on a nether, so too you can undo your hafreshes truma. So what will happen then? So should we say the fact you made a bracha, it was a bracha of atala, it was an unwarranted bracha? So no, not necessarily. That lamafreya, it's not considered to be a bracha matala. If you had a mitzvah in front of you at the time, so then that's a justified bracha, and it's not going to undo the bracha retroactively. Hi.
Is this related to what we had with Hanukkah and lighting candles and if they go out? And if the whole Torah Kula kind of concept that you did your sadlus kind of, you did it with the right intention?
I don't know. I'm not sure if you have to go that far. I think you're just saying that as far as what justifies the bracha, the fact that you're performing a mitzvah at the moment, or that your intent is to perform a mitzvah at the moment, so then you make a bracha on that experience. If something later on happens to pull the rug out from under that mitzvah, it doesn't mean that the bracha was unwarranted. Right? Keep in mind especially that we say that brachos are drabanan. And most of the Rishonim say that a bracha levatala is also a drabanan, even though it sounds like from the Gemara that a bracha levatala is a violation of lo siso shem Hashem lokecha l'shav. That sounds like it's an issur d'oraisa, but a lot of the Rishonim say that's the nas machta, and that it's only aser midrabanan, which you can understand, as Rishon Zalman Arbach understands, as he explains, that to say a bracha levatala is an issur d'oraisa is hard, because then you have to say that or brach shen shricha is nisa deraisa, then you have to say that even saying God's name in this context when you're praising Him is a nisa deraisa, and that Chazal allowed that iser 100 times a day when they instituted the mitzvah derabanan of brachos. So presumably it's not that way. Presumably every bracha is not taking God's name in vain. That's praising God, and that's okay. And Chazal created an iser when they made the chiyuv of brachos. They also created an iser with it of bracha levatala. So it's okay to say, especially if you want a little bit more synergy here. So you could say, right, that Issur Drabbanan are all about compliance, right? There's no inherent significance that defines an Issur Drabbanan. So the fact that this mitzvah will later on be nullified by something doesn't mean that right now you were non-compliant with the Din Drabbanan. You were following the Din Drabbanan of making a bracha, as far as you knew, on a mitzvah, as far as it looks like, and there's no such thing as retroactively defining that as nisa drabanan. So that's a good point. That actually gives us extra synergy points, but that fits in even more to the theory we've been talking about. So that's another reason you could say that we don't really have to worry about starting Sfiras HaOmer with a bracha, even if there's some strong concern that later on something's going to happen that will take us out of that. You could say even further, Rav Soloveitchik had a completely different interpretation of this whole idea that you don't make a bracha on Sfiras HaOmer if you miss a day. So the Rav said that the issue is, it's not like the Achronim, but the Primogadim and others had said, the traditional explanation that Sfira is all one mitzvah, and therefore if you miss one day, the whole thing's no good. But rather, Sfira is 49 separate mitzvahs, and each day stands by itself. So therefore, you'll ask, so why is it a problem to miss a day? So why can't I miss day 12 and then go on to day 13? So the Rav said, and others said, like this also, Rav Zevin is quoted as saying something along these lines, the Babaj Rebbe has been like this as well, that the idea is that the definition of counting requires you to have all the numbers in sequence. So if a mitzvah, the Torah is counting. So counting doesn't just mean saying numbers randomly. You have to say all the numbers in between. So if you say today is day 5, day 6, day 7, you're counting. But if you say 5, 7, 8, 10, that's not called counting. So that's why you can't fulfill the mitzvah after you miss a day, even if the mitzvahs are all separate from each other. So based on that, the problem is only for days that follow the missed day. But days before that aren't going to be a problem. You can have, let's say if you miss day 16, so according to the Rav, you'll have the first 15 days of mitzvos, and after that you'll have a problem. So again, you're not going to have an issue of retroactive bracha levatala. So that, again, has nafkaminis, because this is a concern that if you know you're going to miss a day, or if you think it's a strong possibility you're going to miss a day, so then, according to various svaras that we just said, that wouldn't necessarily give you any reason not to start counting. And this is very okay to half the population, because the question of Sfira Sa'omer for women, if we assume that Sfira Sa'omer is a mitzvah seisha zman grama, which most assume, except for troubling Ramban, which we could talk about in a different time, but if you assume that Sfira Sa'omer is a mitzvah seisha zman grama, so women would be pturos, but they should be able to volunteer. The view of the Ashkenazi Rishonim is that women can volunteer for mitzvah seisha as man grama, and they could also make a bracha. So they could do that with Ulu ben Esrog, and they could do that with Sukkah. So they should be able to do that with Sfira Sa'omer also. They should count with a bracha, and they should be able to, and that would be within this opinion. So that makes sense, except that the Mishnah Berurah advises against it. He quotes in the Sefer Sheila Shmuel that women shouldn't count with a bracha, because since they're not obligated, so we're worried that they'll miss a day. So it sounds like his concern is that if they'll miss a day, so then until they miss that day, all the previous days are also now retroactively nullified, and therefore it was a bracha levatala throughout. So men who are obligated for us, Omer, so fine, they take on that risk, but women who aren't obligated, so they're not going to, they shouldn't take on this risk. However, from what we've seen, all these svaras would say that there's not such a risk, and therefore there's nothing to discourage women from starting to count with a bracha, even if they end up missing a day. And this point was also made by Reb Harfenis, who's a posek in the Satmar community, he's written the many fascinating svaram. So in his Sefer Shalos and Tshuvos that are specifically about Shavuos and Sfiras Omer, he has such a volume, so he discusses this, and he thinks that for a number of reasons it's not a concern, and women can start counting with a bracha. And he notes that in the original source, Mishnah Berurah quotes, actually it doesn't sound like that's what he's worried about either. It sounds like he doesn't necessarily focus on retroactive brachos of Atala, but rather on the idea that maybe the woman will forget a day and not be aware of the halacha that she's not supposed to count with a bracha after that. So he says, so to that, there's an easy eitzah. He says, first of all, it's an easy eitzah, the whole problem of forgetting, because nowadays we can set alarms and things and remind ourselves, and you can get an app, and you can get people to text you regularly. You have ways to deal with it. He doesn't actually go into those examples, but that's relevant. And says this concern is Sheila Shmuel. So we'll teach everybody this halacha. You should know that if you miss a day, then you don't count the bracha after that, then we don't have to worry that that's the reason not to start in the first place. But in any event, the Tosfos and Ksubis says about this idea, the Sofer Lo La'atzma, that the reason there's no bracha on this sphere, which this pasuk is talking about also, is because it's potentially going to get upended in the middle, and then maybe the whole thing wasn't valid. So there's another din, just while we're talking about the other pasuk about the woman, the Sofer Lo, so that, according to many Rishonim, is also the source for the idea of Eid Echad Neman Yisurin, that the Isha is Nemenes, that she counted the 7 days without any kind of Eidus, and even though it affects matters of Isser, so you see that Eid Echad Neman Yisurin. So it sounds like that concept applies to women as well. That this is not then only an Eidus, like Eidus that applies specifically to men, but women also are subject to the rule of Eid Echad Neman Bisurin. So this is why, according to most, this is why we can eat in our homes, and why when our mothers or wives serve us food, so we can assume that the food is kosher, if they say so, because you don't need two Eidim and a Bezdin to establish that the food in your house is kosher. You can trust your mother and you can trust your wife that it is because of Eid Echad Neman Bisur. And that's the way most of the Rishonim tell it. If you have a minute for a rather elaborate story, I guess the next few minutes we'll say things in a slightly different tone. But Rav Schechter tells the story that he heard from the Rav, very elaborate story, that there was a case of the Noda Bihuda, that the Noda Bihuda was upset that there was a woman in the community who was having an affair, and Talmud Chacham wrote a tshuva saying, I think he was the woman's husband, she wrote a tshuva saying why he was mutter to stay married to her, and the Noda Bihuda was very upset about this, and he wrote a tshuva where he explained why it was wrong. One tshuva explaining why the heck it was wrong. But he couldn't distribute the tshuva in Prague where he lived because this guy was very powerful in the community and he caused problems for people who opposed him. Apparently caused problems for the Besht who was living there then. The Besht had to leave town. So therefore, the Noda Bihuda wrote this letter to somebody who was living far away, to the author of the Sefer Becher David, who was living in Constantinople. So now, fast forward 100 years, and you have a meeting of the Chachamim in Europe, and Reb Chaim Brisker was there, and Reb Isaac Lacharif is there. Reb Isaac Lacharif says to, it's a very elaborate story, he says to Reb Chaim that when he gets to Shamayim, he's going to take the Noda Bihuda to a Din Torah. Why? Because he's upset. The Noda Bihuda caused him to waste money. Because he wrote a letter to this Mechaber, the author of the Becher David, and in this letter he talks to him in very flowery terms, makes it seem like he's a wonderful Talmud Chacham and it's a fantastic Sefer. So I went out and bought the Sefer, and there's nothing so interesting in there. It doesn't tell me anything I didn't know already, so I'm going to sue the Noda Bihuda in Beis Din in the next world. So Reb Chaim said to him, said, tell me, is an Isha Ne'amenes Be'dechad Ne'amen Bisur? Do you trust a woman into the process of Yachad Amdi Yisur? So he says, yeah, it's a Tosus. What are you talking about? The Sofer Lola'at, everyone knows that. So Reb Chaim says, the 5 rubles he spent was worth it. Because if you look at the Sefer Becher David, you see that he quotes that there are other Rishonim who disagree. So it happens to be a Machlokas Rishonim. But more well-known is the position based on this, that Isha is Ne'amenes Be'dechad Ne'amen Yisur. So if you don't accept this idea, that Isha is Ne'amenes Be'dechad Ne'amen Yisur, so how do we eat in our houses? How do we trust our mothers and wives the food is kosher? So that is another principle that could also help, that you have a concept of chazaka, that if you know that you've always had kosher food from your mother and from your wife, so then you can rely on that, and that doesn't require edus, and that doesn't necessarily have to be based on Eid Echad Ne'amen Bisur. So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about that, where he talks about, let's say, if somebody's parents aren't religious, so normally the halacha is that as far as Eidus is concerned, if somebody is not fulfilling, if somebody is not observant of a certain halacha, shouldn't have Ne'amanus in that area. So is that a problem? If, let's say, the parents are telling the child that the food is kosher, so should we worry about the Ne'amanus if they themselves don't keep kosher? Sir Moshe does a tshuva where he says, not necessarily. It's not only Eidus that might be at play here, it could also be Chazaka. So if you have basis to trust that the parents are honest people, so then it doesn't necessarily have to go to Hilchus Eidus in order for that to be acceptable. Okay, so that's a big tangent, but it's an interesting tangent, so we'll mention that. And just while we're on this point also, one more tangent. So there is a discussion that in terms of, if we're going to compare Sfira Sa'omer and Sfira V'Zayin Nikiyin, which again is observed today in the context of Hilchus Nida, so does that mean bracha or no bracha? Should there be a formalized process? Should there be the same way that we count Sfira, so we make a bracha and we say today is day 7, today is day 8, whatever it is, so do we require that the woman need to do that also on the way to going to the mikvah? So the Shla says yes, that Tosa says you don't make a bracha, but you do apparently have to count like you count for Sfira Sa'omer, and that would be a pretty big chumrah, because that requires a certain degree of intention, and that would provoke all kinds of other shaylos. What if it wasn't done that way? So the minhag is not that way. The minhag is like, you know, the bihuda, that that's not actually a requirement.
As in, like, and then if you didn't count, like, you would have to, like, restart, or...
Yeah, you have all kinds of shaylos that would come up from that, but luckily for the shaylos, the Noda Bihuda objects to this, and that's the practice. Like in the Bihudu, we don't actually assume that that's required. Okay, so I'll just mention one more thing, and this, I guess, appropriately saved for last. This is totally wild, but this here for synergy, this is a direct parallel to last week's Chamishi. So you might recall, it's just amazing how there's find these parallels in the way the Aliyahs appear in the Parsha. So here is a direct parallel. Remember last week we mentioned a totally wild vort about a remez to Lag BaOmer in the Aliyah, if you recall, that there was the Sefer Paris Yosef had a remez to Lag BaOmer and the Pasuk in Chamishi of Tazria that talks about shaving, and it said that that was the Pasuk Lamed Gimel, that that was a remez to Lag BaOmer. So in that same comment in the Paris Yosef in Tazria, he talks about this aliyah, about Chamishi of Mitzora. How's that for synergy already? And he quotes there from Rav Gershon Henoch of Razin, a remez in this aliyah. And it's almost as wild. It's pretty wild. But that if you look at these last three psukim of the aliyah, get ready for this one? Pasuk Yigimel, Pasuk Yidalet, and Pasuk Tezvav. So what do you notice? What would you notice if you had any ideas and kind of thing you might want to notice? You might notice that if for some reason you decided to count the words in those three psukim together, you would come up with 49 words. So he thought that that was a remez, the idea that just like this is talking about the Tara process of the Zav, so too the 49 days that help make us ready for Kabbalah Satorah, the Tara process from Yitzias Mitzrayim till Kabbalah Satorah, so that's those 49 days are merumas in the 49 words of the Tara process at the end of the Aliyah. Okay, so you ready for the real kicker? So if you take that to be the case, that these 49 days are, these 49 words are keneged 49 days of Siras HaOmer, so guess what the 33rd word in these 49 is? So it's in Pasuk Yudalet, it's the word Moed. So the idea that Lag BaOmer within this process has some kind of a yantif, you say? Did you say it? So that idea, I guess it's a little bit of a better remnant than last week's parsha, because that required using the Pasuk number, which, like you said, is a non-Jewish system. So here we're not drawing on the number of the Pasuk, but the number of words in the psukim, but it's still pretty wild, and therefore, I guess, appropriately saved for last. Okay, so we'll stop here. I wish everyone a not only a good Shabbos, but a great Shabbos. This Shabbos, right? Because it would be lowering things to call it only a good Shabbos.